Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Hi, we are back. Red Scare episode 3.
We had a little Red Scare field trip to the movies the other day, where we all went to go see Red Sparrow,
the official film sponsor of Red Scare.
Even though it came out 2 years ago, it seemed pertinent for us.
Still sold out.
We saw Gloria Steinem at the movie theater.
Yeah, this was like an
not
amazing.
A joke.
Starstruck.
I'm a very superstitious person, so to me, this was like a sign from God.
Incredible omen.
Yeah, yeah. It was almost like I was telling the girls. It was almost like, you know, the passing of the guard. She was passing the torch from her like kind of outmoded liberal Clintonite brand of feminism to our like abject Venmo.
Yeah, and she has no idea we were there, but that's what she was definitely doing.
Yeah. But anyway, Gloria Steinem, if you're ever listening, because clearly septuagenarians listen to the podcast, you can be a guest.
We'll have you on.
So Red Sparrow.
Woof.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it after we watched it to keep it all bottled up.
I mean, so Red Sparrow is a movie starring Jennifer Lawrence
as a Russian ballerina, who gets hurt and gets sent to state school number 4 by her like government official KGB uncle to train to become a spy. But a special kind of spy called a sparrow who is trained in the art of seduction.
Magic pussy.
And she learns that every person is a puzzle of need. And when you figure out how to complete their puzzle,
how to give them what they want,
they'll tell you everything.
Yeah. And I will say like that while, J Law's accent is horrendous and atrocious.
Truly bad. Also, her body is not a ballerina's body.
Well, she had a double. I was reading about it.
Yeah. And in the dance scenes for sure. But then you see her naked so much throughout.
Yeah.
Well, so apparently all the dancing shots, it's only 6 minutes. Uh-huh. It was all filmed at the beginning of shooting because the director knew, because she's, you know, notoriously not a good dieter.
Yeah.
That had to happen at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's notoriously clumsy and like fluctuates weight. I mean,
which she prides herself on.
I identify.
She's a real girl, guys.
She's just a real authentic girl. But she didn't have a body double for the
nudity. Yeah, but she went through like 4 months of ballerina training too with the same guy that trained Natalie Portman for Black Swan.
So she basically went to like a state school type situation. Yeah.
She practiced in her garage.
But at any rate, Jennifer Lawrence plays kind of like the like triple stereotype of the Russian woman who's like a ballerina and a spy and a whore all at once.
Exactly. An icy whore.
Yeah. And there are plenty of great sound bites from this film, but I was thinking about how, you know, when I was watching this film, I had like a number of questions that came up. You know, if this is like supposed to be contemporary, like Putin era Russian film, why does everybody look like Stasi agents? Like they're all wearing like aviator sunglasses and fur trapper hats and, you know,
but also using smartphones.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes place in the
contemporary
era.
And also if this contemporary Putin style Russia still looks like Cold War era the Soviet Union, then why does she have nice lingerie? Like, where does she get it?
They supply her with that.
No, before that. She has like sexy panties before she even starts at the whore school. By the way, she you know, in a very famous and a very memorable scene, Jennifer Lawrence tells her her uncle, you know, you sent me to whore school.
Mm-hmm. We all had a nice laugh.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I just realized that the matron at the whore school was Charlotte Rampling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm. So the other question that, you know, Dasha brought up was like, this woman gets her hair dyed out of a box like most Russian women do, but it looks impeccably blonde.
Yeah, it's like a perfect highlighted yeah, yeah. blonde.
Her lesbian spy housemaid had to step in and make it right because she couldn't handle it herself.
She wasn't a lesbian.
Well, she was LARPing as a lesbian.
Yeah, who sometimes a person's puzzle of need yeah. includes some like rug munching.
Muff diving. And of course, also the most glaring thing for me is that this woman in the film, Jennifer Lawrence's character, is called Dominika Egorova, which is not a name that any Russian person would ever have, because Dominika basically sounds like a name of Catholic origin. And as you all know, Russians are primarily Christian Orthodox. And like throughout the film, Jennifer Lawrence's character adopts a number of like very believably ordinary aliases. Like at the horror school, she simply goes by Katya. And at
Katerina at one point.
Yeah. And when she gets deployed on her first mission, she starts going by Katerina Zubkova, which is very common. But Dominika, I mean, like, I was wondering, like, whose ass did they pull that out of?
It came from the book.
Yeah, but whose ass did the author pull it out of? And it just goes to show that, like, Americans have, like, a penchant for producing very kind of, like, elaborate, high-budget productions about the foreign menace, but they can't be bothered to actually do the research to ensure that it doesn't seem half-assed.
No, well, because it's all, like, a product of, like, this Cold Warist fantasy.
Yeah.
Which is why it also feels so timeless.
I mean, yeah. the author of the book, Jason Matthews, worked for the CIA for like 30 years.
And he still can't clobber together a believable story about Russians.
Because his mind is clouded with like horniness.
Yeah. Well, also in the film, basically, you know, the head mistress of the school, Charlotte Rampling, criticizes the United States as being sort of weakened by shopping and social media, mm-hmm. and describes Russia as being like the only country that's capable of reclaiming its former role as a world power, and that's what the Sparrows are here to do. They are reclaiming Russia's status as a world power, but through like seducing
intricate psychological manipulation.
Through basically like
sucking and fucking.
Yeah, because in the account in the book or in the movie and presumably in the book, their idea of like psychological manipulation basically boils down to like the most elementary school tactics of sexual
like
seduction.
Sucking dick.
Yeah. No, and I was saying like, you know, like your assignment is to go to like to fly to Vienna or Amsterdam and suck off this diplomat. And you know, only Russian women have what it takes to blow some middling like
American official. Yeah.
Yeah, some middling official from like Western Europe.
I would fly on a mission to Vienna to suck her uncle's dick.
Yeah.
For sure. We're Evs. I'd meet him anywhere.
Yeah, we love her uncle.
Literally sending you guys pictures at 2 a.m.
Like, it looks like if Putin was actually hot.
That actor Matthias, whatever, that Belgian guy, he is typically cast in more like heart-throbby
yeah,
roles.
Yeah, he is. I was looking through
his I was surprised that they casted him as this. I mean, he looks like Putin.
Yeah, he does. He looks like I guess sexy that, Putin.
I guess that was a total coincidence.
Oh. Huh.
I don't know. I mean, but like, you know, apparently.
Come on the show.
No one. We'll all suck you up. But apparently no one at this like highly prestigious and insanely selective apparatus of the Russian intelligence agency like got the memo that Russia is just about as weakened by capitalism as America.
Yeah, they're still like operating on this duality yeah. of like communist times.
Yeah, yeah.
Where was like a good Russian club scene or like anything like
club?
That? I guess there was.
Well, that was in Hungary.
Yeah.
We won't, we're not going to do too many spoilers because I know.
We won't spoil it for you. But I will say, so while J-Law's accent was like completely horrendous and the interiors were not entirely convincing, the one thing that I think the film really did well was like the look. of like J-Law's look. Like she looked very convincingly Russian.
Yeah, I thought so.
Like she looked like Anna Kournikova or something.
She had some nice like wide leather belts.
And it's like, you know, like I've always said that, you know, Russian women suffer from a very aggressive version of resting bitch face called Russian cunt face. And she really had that down. Like she looked like sexy Boris Yeltsin or like
Russian cunt
Leonid Brezhnev at his resort in Yalta or whatever.
Wait, if we're not going to give spoilers, then I can't talk about my favorite scene.
No, you can
go ahead. Whatever.
The Mary Louise Parker scene.
Oh, yeah. Because you resemble her. She did a great job.
I just identify with her character.
For being wasted.
Meg identifies.
Giving up the secret.
Meg identifies with the Mary Louise Parker's character of being like some sort of like American secretary. She's just
trying to pay her like
works
kids.
For a senator or a congressperson.
Secretary of State or something.
Yeah.
But she's just trying to pay her kids' tuition at Sarah Lawrence. Like, come on.
And she says, like, I don't have any, like, ideological reason for doing this.
And, you know, on a weekly basis, Meg is surrounded by two Russian whores who have been trained in the art of seduction.
One day I'll be able to pick the puzzle of people apart.
Stick with us.
Magic pussy. Daddy, can I trust you, my magic pussy? Red Sparrow's coming out at a time when there's like this revived Cold Warism and everybody's like obsessed with Russians and Russian collusion.
Thank God.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, really, truly. And it like plays on the stereotype of like Russian women as, you know, basically artsy whores.
Conniving sluts.
Yeah. And like on the surface.
Who are like soulless.
Yeah, and you know, on some level that stereotype is true because unlike American women who, you know, when they're sluts, they're just sluts, Russian women...
Well, the essence of Russophobia to me is sort of this idea of Russians distinctly not having morals.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that they're somehow even... They're not like Westerners.
Yeah.
They're like inherently more sinister because they lack an internal moral compass.
Yeah, and that was part of the movie where, you know, they were working for like Jennifer Lawrence and her love interest were working for like dueling intelligence agencies, but you know, the Russians you know, will throw their own under, but the CIA always protects its own kind or whatever.
I mean, ultimately she's like very loyal and working for her mom.
Yeah.
Like
Who was a very like
sick
tertiary
lady.
Pointless character.
And too hot to be disabled in my humble opinion. but you know, there's some truth to the stereotype to the degree that like when Americans are whores, they're just whores. Whereas when Russians are whores, you take any Russian girl who's like an escort or a mail order bride, and she has like a PhD in philology or linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like the real fear is that Russians, this sort of stereotypical fear is that Russians lack moral compass, but are also like diabolically intelligent.
Yeah.
Which like, if you've ever been at a party with like drunk Russian people like eating zakuski and like taking shots, believe me, you will be woefully mistaken. But I think like, yeah, like, you know, like Dasha says, like Russian women are compelling because they have like the exotic good looks and the mm-hmm. total lack of morals and are also sexually submissive. And on a deeper feminist level, I was thinking about this, like the Russian woman is somebody who, like the stereotype, is somebody who's able to separate her like hetero appetite for being sexually objectified mm-hmm. from her professional success and intellectual ambitions. And like be like she can successfully, in a sense, like reconcile the cognitive dissonance of being objectified on one hand and being kind of dominant
right.
on the other. And that like probably owing to the fact that there is no cognitive dissonance for her or whatever. And, you know, this is like totally counter to the whole like liberal feminist, like American liberal feminist party line, which like, you know, it's like they're constantly hand wringing over like, can you wear makeup and call yourself feminist? Can you watch porn and call yourself
feminist? You have anal sex.
You have anal sex and call yourself feminist. can you like,
can you have a job and call yourself? Like,
no, that one's a definitive no. Like, can you watch Roman Polanski films or listen to Lana Del Rey's music and call yourself feminist? And it's always like this constant, needless, completely manufactured war, mm-hmm. like internal war that doesn't exist for most of the world.
They say of Russians in general that their souls are less attuned to duality.
Yeah.
Like they're more comfortable existing in a kind of gray area.
What happened to your souls? Huh? I said, what happened to your souls?
I don't know. I think our parents like got too drunk. Genetically tampered with our souls. Do you dare not to kill for passion? Not to wear bloody fashion. I just want to take some time out, mm-hmm. you know, clearly air about something that's been weighing heavily on my soul. So a lot of people after the YouTube shooting came to me and were like, Anna, are you the YouTube shooter? And, you know, while I truly appreciate the outpouring of fanfare and concern, I do want to say, you know, I want to clear up some rumors and quote the legendary Afro-Caribbean poet Shaggy. In saying it wasn't me.
Wasn't Anna, ladies wasn't and gentlemen. Me. But you did follow that girl on Instagram.
I did, yeah. This was like a weird fucked up thing. It was very shocking for many of us because, you know, I've been following her for a long time.
How did you come across her? Just, you're both into animal liberation.
Yeah, we're into animal liberation and like obscure Persian shit. And I thought, right, you know, honestly, I thought like, whoa, here's a girl. She's like hot and eclectic and like not part of the standard art scene, but is actually producing like very interesting artistic videos.
Yeah.
And is kind of campy and ironic and has cool costumes.
I liked what I was able to find of her work post the shooting because I wasn't familiar with her work.
And allegedly, as some people said, that she was like sort of an ironic viral personality in Iran mm-hmm. and in like Iranian communities in, you know, New York and LA. But I really liked her unironically. So it was almost like somebody you know committing that sort of crime. It was shocking.
Well, she's being a little bit heralded, not as like a hero exactly, but I've seen, you know, a lot of people like circulating her image in not exactly like a negative light.
Well, I think primarily because she's attractive and also because
she didn't kill anyone.
She didn't kill anyone. And that's easy. It's, you know, remember when the Boston Marathon bombings happened and people were sort of going to bat, like especially like teenage girls and like
for Joe Carr
because he was hot.
I was transfixed by Joe Carr.
Yeah. He looks like my sibling.
I loved him.
Yeah.
And his Twitter was chill.
Yeah.
He liked to smoke weed. He seemed innocent to me.
Yeah, and like so does this woman to some extent, even though she was clear. I think Joe Carr was probably just like bored and like,
well, I think restless. His brother like roped him into it.
Yeah, and this woman was like clearly mentally ill. But you know, I know a lot what people were thinking when news of the shooting first broke, and they were probably like, oh God, like another disgruntled
white tech person.
And they were like, another instance of senseless gun violence that I'm going to have to like take to social media and write a post about how I don't condone this. I'm condemning it. You know, maybe there's going to be like a Facebook flag filter for it or something. And then
je suis YouTube.
Yeah. Je suis Nassim. And then when it turned out that the shooter was female, you know what everybody was thinking, which is like, yes, queen, go off.
Yeah, finally.
Like, flawless. Representation.
Yeah. And I think people probably breathe like a collective sigh of relief. When they found out that the YouTube shooter was female. But I will say that this is really definitive proof that men are better at women than everything because
oh no,
including manicures and massages,
massacres.
Yeah, and massacres, because this woman, you know, came barreling into this office with the intention of like committing mass murder, and she only managed to like off herself.
Dark.
No, it's true. But also I think we're so desensitized to gun violence that like if no one dies, we basically don't care.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like
I mean, my feeling about it was that this was like really, really like the logical conclusion of the liberal feminist gospel of inclusion, when, you know, liberal feminists are like on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, like, we need more female military contractors and we need more female prison guards. Wardens. Yeah. And on the flip side of that is that you get like, you know, more female school shooters or whatever. Back in the day when I used to go to grad school, one of my mentors, Linda Nochlin, wrote in 1974, I think, like a very groundbreaking essay called Why Have There Been No Great Female Artists? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to answer that question, you can also ask like a converse question, which is why have there been no great female serial killers?
Yeah, none really.
Yeah.
I mean, the lady monster is based on, her name?
Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah, yeah, she's the one that comes to mind immediately, but
yeah,
even that wasn't great.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like calculated enough. It was all kind of like motivated by this like feminine trauma.
Yeah.
She's literally the first one on Google that comes up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all we have, huh?
Yeah, that's all we've got. I joke that women are worse than men at everything, and of course that's not true, but there's like, you know, a concerted push to shoehorn women, to like teach girls how to code and shoehorn women into STEM, and maybe like that's nothing to aspire to.
What should we be aspiring to?
I don't know. Domesticity, Dasha. I mean, you outlined your platform very articulately last episode.
Yeah, just like a docile sort of domestic existence, I
domestic
suppose.
Goddess.
Maybe, or podcasting.
Yeah. I feel like a domestic goddess could be where the ultimate serial killer could be bred.
Yeah, finally arises. Yeah. But, you know, liberal feminists, this is really kind of the pinnacle of lean-in feminism. They've been banging the war drum for, you know, almost a decade now that women should, like, lean in and take the professional reins. And it's, like, very hard and unforgiving.
She did it.
She did it. I'm with her.
The YouTube shooter?
Yeah.
Yeah. She did.
the other thing I was like, thinking about is how this shooting in a way is like the unforeseen consequence of all, or like the unforeseen pinnacle of all the kind of ambient rage unleashed by Me Too, where it's like, you know, ostensibly an issue of sex and power, but is really like a labor problem because so many women are now entering the workforce. And they're basically competing with other women, but also men for like the limited number of seats at the table.
Right. And they want the rules to sort of be tailored to not necessarily in their favor, but in like an inclusionary way for women.
Yeah.
Which is not how the workplace works.
Yeah. I mean, they're entering into like a basically traditionally male dominated sphere. Which, like, it's very clear that we can never go back, and nor do we want to. But at the same time, there's, like, clearly, like, a paradigm shift. And, it, you know, there's that saying with, like, greater responsibility comes, or with greater freedom comes greater responsibility. But also with what greater responsibility entails a lot of the time is, like, more precarity and more indignity and more compromise. But, you know, I was thinking the idea was that the YouTube shooter acted like she did because she was sort of fed up protesting the fact that YouTube demonetized her videos, meaning they pulled ad content from her videos.
And they censored some of her like workout videos.
Really? Wait, her workout videos?
Well, she made these like arty videos of her doing ab exercises that got taken down.
Interesting. Why? Because they were
too sexy?
Too sexy?
They weren't like that much sexier than other exercise videos, really. I think that they were just sort of off-putting and like, or what, for whatever reason, like she was already being censored.
Well, she also,
she was already like in this.
I assume that the reason that they demonetized her was because she was also posting very graphic content of animals being tortured on factory farms, because she's also, in addition to being like a video artist and a bodybuilder, she was also a militant vegan, as she's described in the media. That's redundant. No, I'm kidding.
I wish we could have had her as a guest.
Yeah, it's too bad. Well, maybe when we're all annihilated, we can do our podcast in hell and she'll be with us. But I guess the idea is that she interpreted the demonetization of her videos as like a calculated like conspiracy between Silicon Valley and factory farming to silence her and her
views.
That's
interesting.
And you know, the reality was obviously closer to the fact that the YouTube brand didn't want to associate itself with her controversial content.
Maybe she was more of a Vivo girl.
But yeah, I know that we shouldn't quote things on this podcast because it gets like long and unwieldy, but I really like this quote from this woman at Forbes who wrote that if you remove the online setting and the shooter's mental illness, the situation that led up to the gun violence is a new kind of labor versus management problem. So the YouTube shooter wasn't on YouTube's payroll as an employee, but she was still a worker who was not being paid for her labor. Which, doesn't that sound familiar?
Yeah. Sure. Sounds like a Fiverr employee.
Yeah.
Or someone on Fiverr.
Or any of like the content that we produce that we aren't.
Yeah, like any of us.
Remotely compensated for.
Like literally all of us.
Yeah.
Like us right now.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. Like in some sense, like, who was it? I think it was like Ronald Lang, who's like a psychiatrist, said like a famous, I think he was like a psychoanalyst. He said that, you know, the only sane response to like the insane world we live in is insanity.
Right.
So like, to me, even like the history, the kind of recent longstanding history of gun violence in America is not at all aberrant. Just like Trump isn't aberrant. It's totally symptomatic of what's going on in America as a whole.
I mean, she seemed chill. She seemed like cool to me and like aestheticized in a way that's made me feel like she would resonate with a lot of people. And what I've seen, like, she seemed very like primed to be circulated on like Tumblr already, you know, as this kind of like lots of girls I know who are into like revolutionary, like scum style politics really took to her.
Yeah, like American people, like not even like Persians. Okay, that's interesting.
People from Oakland.
From the women's college I went to.
No, and you know, I'm already like, I was thinking that I'm probably already on a lot of watch lists for coining the phrase detonate the vest and saying that Hassan Nasrallah, the supreme daddy of Hezbollah, could get it. So you know, I'm going to go on record here as saying that she was like a good artist. She was kind of like the Persian Azeri Ryan Tricarton.
For sure. Yeah.
And I like, I look at this bitch and I think like, man, if you had held out, you know, you could have been a contender. You could have been like, you could have had a booth at Basel instead of. I doubt it.
No, I know. In a way, the shooting's probably the best thing she could have done for her career. Yeah.
Yeah. She could have been in the
triennial. She would have continued to toil in vegan obscurity. Yeah. and but, not be paid for it.
But I was thinking about how, like, she, you know, Nassim Aghdam is like kind of like my R. Kelly or Woody Allen. Like, just like you can't separate the fact that Woody Allen, you know, made off with his wife's like adopted Vietnamese child and then possibly diddled his biological child.
I don't think he did. But
yeah, I'm with you on that.
different. We'll have a different episode for that.
But yeah, we should actually do that. But you know, you can decouple the fact that Woody Allen's sexual indiscretions from the fact that he's like, in a way, the premier auteur of Jewish male psychosexual dysfunction.
Well, yeah, and that's a lot of his work deals with that and deals with his like preoccupation with younger women. And I think that Mia Farrow weaponized that against him in their divorce proceedings.
Yeah, we should actually definitely host a whole separate episode about this, or like, you know, just
we'll
like
get a good guest.
Yeah. but just like, and you can also like separate the fact that like R. Kelly peed in the mouths of like underprivileged teenagers.
Many people do.
Yeah. Well, not in the mouths of underage children, but the fact
lots of people separate that from. Yeah. I'm like, we all do that, of course.
But like from the fact that he's like a very epic songwriter and storyteller with a very coherent, cohesive aesthetic.
And Nassim.
And Nassim is kind of like on a low grade level, kind of that for me. Do you want
to- in that you separate her prolific video artwork from her the from YouTube the fact shooting.
Yeah, which of course they're related on some like, you know, psychological wavelength, but you know, I can enjoy her artwork. I can't now because Instagram has pulled it, and it's all, I think it's all on Daily Motion. You know, producer Meg had a really cool, great insight that the YouTube shooter is like the new Basil Stabber. If you guys remember, like the sexy Asian Minx.
I can't forget.
Yeah,
the Art Basil Stabber. I was at Art Basil that year, but I left
really
before it happened. But I remember reading the article.
I'm jealous.
I remember reading the retelling of it that people, which I kind of don't believe. It sounds like sort of cynical art world reporting that when it happened, people, no one did anything because they thought it was like a performance art piece. But I'm sure in reality it was like immediately distressing and
scary. Yeah.
Scary.
It was like that time that I think it was like a Turkish guy who like shot that Russian diplomat.
He was so hot.
He was really hot.
That was such a iconic image.
But it was an image that was like out of an art performance.
Yeah. In the suit and the rumpled like hair.
Yeah. And that's like the saloon. And that was like the image of the foxy Basil Stabber getting like handcuffed by the Miami police.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite images
of all time. Yeah. And we, you know, this girl looks like somebody like Woody Allen would get a hard on for. And like we live in a total like hyper simulation where a shooting at a diplomatic function is indiscernible from a piece of performance art.
Right. Because they're all like circulating images in the same way.
A couple of weeks back, as some of you may know, I wrote an instantly viral barn burner essay called Art Won't Save Us, where I basically said that the old but newfangled style of protesting Trump by making shitty graffiti and slogan art is ineffectual and artists will have to find a new way to get involved with politics. And I feel like Nassim sort of took that animus to like really
maybe
the worst,
she read your article
the worst possible conclusion, because like, you know, what if the new institutional critique is like artists becoming terrorists?
Well, that's, and you say also because Trump himself is also like performative and outrageous and like hyper real in this way.
Yeah, yeah,
that art can't compete with it.
Yeah, never mind Andrea Frazier. Fucking yeah. Collectors. It's yeah. Time to bomb something.
Yeah. I mean, that's really the only way to get political. I mean, you have basically two options. You can either sort of accept the art world for what it is, which is like, you know, a dog and pony show.
And become like a zombie formalist.
Yeah. Like, you know, traffic and like painterly gigantism or like photography or whatever is like trending these days.
Or like chop someone's head off.
Or, yeah, or you can like blow up a train car.
I agree that those are the two options.
And you have to be like very kind of not, you have to be completely self-aware and not delusional about this.
Or the third option is being like a fake artist.
Which is what?
Just like kind of having the, like us.
Yeah.
Like having like a bohemian demeanor of an artist, but not actually producing any work or doing anything.
I mean, I'd like to think that we're temperamentally artists.
Exactly. Yeah.
And maybe
that's one, the new being actually an artist is not producing any ephemera or anything. And just,
yeah, this is like the really dark Joseph Beuys statement, like everyone's an artist, which he meant in like a totally cynical, dispirited way that everybody's like, you know, everybody in like the Instagram like and deviant art communities has like taken at face value. Like we're all creative now.
I would classify us as experimental noise musicians.
What? Yeah. Yo, I guess so. And I mean, it's, and everybody now thinks that basically that they're like entitled to creative self-expression, which they're certainly not. I mean, this is the thing. I think this is the main confusion in the art world. It's like, you know, the government should hypothetically, ideally, theoretically be a democracy, but art has never been a democracy. And ever. Yeah. And, you know, let's not scramble the categories here.
My slogan for my campaign is ISIS, suck a d- Remember, America, suck a d- Suck it.
Speaking, well, we just talked about artists we love. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to one we hate. Patrick Collins.
Yeah, wow.
Patrick
Collins.
I really love when the segue comes naturally.
I'm hesitant to say that I hate Patrick Collins.
Oh, yeah, maybe you don't.
I mean, sure, I get it. But as a, you know, ingenue.
Okay, you don't have to claim
hatred. I feel
hatred.
Like I should. I mean, we can keep this in. I don't care.
No, this I'm is being this is like really great, rare moment of disagreement on the show. We should really keep up the frisson. So anyway, Patrick Collins directed the latest Cardi B video. What's the song called?
Bartier Cardi.
Okay.
Which she performed on SNL this weekend, where she also announced her pregnancy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whoa, I missed that one.
She's pregnant.
I knew she was pregnant. I didn't know she was on SNL, but I don't watch that shit. So
yeah,
good for you. Meg.
Congratulations to Cardi B on her pregnancy. So Patrick Collins, the video thoughts
sucks.
On the video. The video sucks. So wait, so you like Patrick or ambivalent
as a like frail white formerly blonde girl?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't object to some like. Hazy photos of me with like next to a pink light.
Yeah, like wearing white panties and white socks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a little, it's like fairly close to my like virgin suicides aesthetic anyway. Okay.
Yeah. This
so
is
I can't exactly.
I mean, Patrick Collins is like the new Balthus, which might be like a overly flattering example, but I think it's one in line with like the whole idea of selfie feminism, which is...
And pedophilia,
yeah. And I think like, you know, there's like that whole argument around selfie feminism in like 2016 that you know, women artists were finally seizing the means of production. Mm-hmm. It was like a very quasi-Marxist argument. We're seizing the means of production from...
We're turning the male gaze back on ourselves.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if any of you have ever read my Twitter, you know what I think about this whole position, which I won't necessarily go into here. But Patrick Collins is probably like by far the most commercially successful of the original selfie feminists.
Oh, yeah, by far.
By far. And she's really kind of successfully commercialized the whole like hazy cotton candy
child pornography
childhood bedroom aesthetic into this like kind of mid-market like aesthetic Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, I guess I just thought that I thought she was going to be the end of it. Like,
yeah,
I didn't think she'd get
this
far.
She's just getting started.
Yeah,
I thought between like We had our run with Ryan McGinley and like Alex Prager, and it's just like I thought it hit ahead, but it clearly has not.
And I think the Cardi B video, when I watched it yesterday,
me too. Hashtag me too.
And like in line with her whole vibe, it is very. I found it remarkably like sexless.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Very like devoid of any like meaningful sexuality.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I hadn't even thought of that because Cardi B is like obviously a very sexy female who's literally busting out of her clothing at all times. She's like tits and ass and like an attitude. And she's a person who like, you know, we can debate if she's like the pinnacle of female beauty, but she certainly like has sexiness in spades.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's like, I mean, she actually kind of, I'm going to probably get flack for this because somebody's going to call me a racist or whatever. Surprise, surprise.
Go for it.
But she sort of reminds me of like Celia Cruz or Rosie Perez, like these girls who are like basically not conventionally attractive, but are very cool and sexy. And
yeah.
Yeah. She's not like, you know, like a Rihanna or a Beyonce.
Wow. You're giving Beyonce...
Well,
Beyonce's
like,
yeah,
conventionally pretty or whatever.
I feel like that was tough for Anna to utter.
Yeah, it was very tough for me. But Cardi B is like...
Yeah, she has style. She's got personality. She like came up through reality TV.
Yeah.
Which endears her to America.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a long-term fan of Love and Hip Hop. That's one of my favorite shows, along with Vanderpump Rules. And I remember watching like the early seasons of the New York franchise, which is where Cardi B was on, being a girl from the Bronx. And she was like awesome. I mean, you knew that she was going to be successful.
She's got it. She's got that X factor.
Yeah, she's got it. And she's like funny. She has her own like idiom. She has her own like jokes or whatever.
The best part of the Petra video is when she's on the edge of the tub twerking. Yeah. And you only see it for like a second.
Yeah.
And that was cool. They did the stupid like move of like objectifying men instead. Mm-hmm. Like there's some like shirtless guys in a hallway, none of which are like exceptional.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even like Swedish looking white
guys. There's even a white guy.
Yeah.
There's two of them.
And 21 Savage being tied up and savaged by women. But
you know, there, like I said to you yesterday, there was no weapons in the whole thing. And
so the conceit in like interviews, Petra Collins talks about how Cardi B is like channeling Ginger from Casino or Elvira from Scarface. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking like,
so it's like a gangster like, concept.
Gangster mole. But I was opulent. Thinking like back to your comment that this video is like totally devoid of sexuality. It's also totally devoid of like, you know, drugs, like piles of cocaine and mm-hmm. violence, like, you know, AK-47s in like the trunk of a car.
There's like some vague references to money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That aren't even that meaningful.
I mean, it's like really kind of the pinnacle of like neoliberal aesthetics. It's in that it's just references to references that are like unmoored from any other previous references.
I feel like if anything, it looks like an edgy lingerie editorial.
Yeah.
Like a video accompaniment to it.
Yeah. And I think as like as far as photographers are concerned, and artists in general, but photographers being the artists who work
the least
mainly in like what's up?
I said the least.
The least art. No,
photography's
the least artistic
easy.
Of the artists. Yeah. Photographers being the that subset of artists that works for the most or like largely in commercial mm-hmm. as well as like fine art. It's really a bad sign when your commercial work is like indistinguishable from your fine art work.
Wait, also she puts herself in everything too.
Was she in the video?
No, I did notice she wasn't in that video, but almost everything else. I don't know why that bugs
me.
Well,
she's thin.
I know, but
she's thin and weird looking. She's like the classic like Dime Square girl that like you know, regulars of Dimes.
I always see her on the L train.
Yeah. But like, you know, she's like a girl, like a skinny.
She's going to unfollow me after.
Oh, God.
She's like, you know, a skinny white girl whose pants are like wedged way too high up in her fupa, like blue jeans and white sneakers.
Tasha's not on board with
Anna,
this.
That's how I dress.
I know. I don't see anything wrong with it. I didn't say it was bad.
My pants are literally up my fupa right now.
That's true. Mine have been known to be, but nobody wants to see that.
They're camouflage.
I literally
anyways.
Wear children's clothes.
Like, you know,
I'm 27 years old.
Dasha, don't advertise your age on air.
Sorry. I mean, I meant 22.
We're all 19 here. But basically, watching this video was like witnessing Cardi B's management have a meeting. That's what it felt like. It was like totally kind of above board and calculated. And to me, that's a shame because I really love Cardi B and I really love her brand of feminism.
I feel
like this video doesn't do justice to it.
No,
it's,
I mean,
it's a letdown.
We watched her other videos after that and they were all radically different.
Yeah.
Than the Petra video.
Well, after I watched the Petra video, I watched the Rihanna's video for Pour It Up. Do you guys remember that?
I like that video, yeah.
Amazing. Like really accomplishes what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
Formally perfect. Just like great asses. Yeah. That's all a music video, really.
Right.
Yeah. And I watched, what did we watch?
We watched Migos. Who are like very conceptual with their music videos.
Well, we did watch a bunch of Migos videos and because, you know, on this podcast, we do really kind of hard hitting reportage and therefore intensive research. So we did watch a succession of Migos videos. And one of the things that really stands out is like the Migos videos look way more high budget. And I think like Petra Courtright is like a pinnacle You know,
Petra Courtright
or Petra Collins. Sorry. I actually like
Petra Courtright, friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show. Of the show. Love you.
It's really sorry.
Yeah, but I will say as an aside, Petra Courtright is another one of the early selfie feminists who did the smart thing and used the platform to pivot herself into making sellable art.
Expensive art,
which is what you should be doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, shout out to Petra Courtright. Petra Collins, on the other hand, I mean, followed a similar trajectory. But when you look at her work as a whole, it's very mid market and almost like low budget. Because, you know, the Migos guys are probably hiring very expensive directors.
Right.
And I think Petra Collins probably costs a lot less, you know, in the grand scheme.
I don't know about that.
I bet she costs a reasonable amount.
I feel like she's pricey. I don't know.
I mean, she's probably pricier than most, but I think this is like a classic example of like neoliberal aesthetics. And when I say neoliberal aesthetics, I don't just mean like the external like visuals. I mean like the way that kind of the admin is handled and the way that the admin is almost kind of
the way that the visuals are produced.
Yeah, the way that the visuals are produced and the way that the whole kind of behind, like, what do you call it, backdoor administration is almost put on full view in a way. And I guarantee that she is probably cheaper than a really high-ranking director or photographer, which is why they hire her, because she's a person with, like, some street cred and notoriety and like feminist bona fides, but it's probably easy, like cheaper to procure. And somebody like Cardi B, who has like a lot of potential ahead of her, is not yet a huge pop star. Like, it remains to be seen whether she'll be a one hit wonder or whether
she just put out a new album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is hit her. I listened to and is
the whole album.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it's the kind of thing where I need to listen to it
like
20 more times to get properly like brainwashed or something, but like half of it's probably decent. But I have faith in her as a public figure and a pop star for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, me too, but it's always a crapshoot whether a pop star is going to be able to like leverage their initial buzz into any sort of career longevity.
Well, if anyone has some intel on Petra Collins' day rate, we love transparency on this pod and I need a intel.
Photographer to take some shots of me in my children's clothing.
Your post info.
I've got some white socks that I need to take out for a spin.
Yeah, the dollar store white panty. Mm-hmm. Those are notorious in the photo shoots.
And like, I mean, the other thing is like, I was looking what we were watching, like Bodak Yellow, and the styling that video is much more kind of in your face conventional hip hop video, but like the styling was better, you were saying. And
I said to you last night, she looked better garbed up than like naked in that video, because it was just styled so much better.
Yeah. But the other thing that kind of freaks me out about, especially about Cardi B, is that she's almost like a vector or a cipher for all of the worst kind of like platform capitalism advertising. Like, if you look at her videos, it's all like product placement, which is nothing new, but it's like Beats by Dre and Lyft and like a couple of the
chapstick.
That had like a lawsuit against it because it would like,
which one?
The EOS lip chapstick.
Why?
There was like a class action lawsuit against it because it was like people were having these colossal allergic reactions to them.
Oh, Jesus.
Oy vey.
It was like, you know, raccoon dog bone, shaved down bone residue. But
she's ready to like whore herself out for whatever.
Yeah.
Like Steve Madden. I mean, like, don't do it.
It's even in the Migos videos, there were like Lyft product placement. I think it's just everything, but it seemed especially in your face in that video.
But I think Cardi is like a totally new artist who is like, she is really kind of like at the forefront of all this advertising. Like, if you remember a couple of weeks ago, she like partnered with Tinder and announced that it was like a college like a university contest, and she announced that the university with the most right swipes would get a free Cardi B concert. And then now recently she partnered with Lyft And that is like less, I'm not sure what's going on there, but basically if you punch in a code in your Lyft car, it becomes a Cardi car. I don't know
if that's like, I don't know what that means. A hologram of her, she appears in the Lyft. Oh my God, I'm going to sign up for this lip balm class action lawsuit like yeah, right now. Perfect. Apparently it makes your lips crack, bleed, and blister. Mm. Mm-hmm. You get $25.
Not bad.
But like, you know, I was saying this on Twitter and I was having this conversation with a friend, like really it's like this new totally like ass to mouth digital economy where like everything is cross promotional with everything else. And you really can't tell the difference now between like a music video, a work of art, or like, yeah, a car commercial.
So do you want to do a closing of any sort? Anyone?
I will say thanks for joining us. Oh, Tonya, I'll see you in hell.
It's like 7:11.
Is he sleeping? No.
Okay. Yeah, we're recording right now. Yes, we are. Can you let us do our work?
Wow, another example of toxic masculinity. Uh-huh.
I don't interrupt you when you're doing cum town. We're drinking vodka. What? Meg has a boyfriend.
I'm the only one who doesn't have a boyfriend, but don't misgender me.
Do you guys want spaghetti?
We have to do 30 more minutes of this fucking podcast. Can you?
Women's issues podcast.
Bye.
No, I see. Sorry. Sorry. Ice, come on.
Well, men are so disrespectful.
I know.
Icy.
Icy, go. Follow your dad. Follow daddy.